All right, we're beginning here at the bottom of Nun Gimel Amud Bet. The Gemara is discussing the positions of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, as we discussed yesterday, with regards to Maaser Sheni Vehekdesh, their positions with regard to Mezid and Shogeg. What the Gemara now is addressing is Rabbi Meir's Shita with regards to Hekdesh, where Rabbi Meir says that b'Mezid it's mitchalel, that if you intentionally misappropriate the Hekdesh, it is profaned, and the money becomes yours, and therefore the Kiddushin goes through because of the Gzerat HaKatuv. On the other hand, by Shogeg, you cannot be in violation of Mi'ilah, because what we left off with yesterday is that anywhere that the money is, it is B'Gaza D'Bei Rachmana, that it's in the house of Hashem, it is not left Hekdesh, and therefore there's no Mi'ilah. And as we said in yesterday's daf, that either the two parties or one of the parties doesn't want to be involved in such a transaction, and therefore the transaction fails. So that's what we said was the Shita of Rabbi Meir, basically saying that by Shogeg, there's no such thing as Me'ila for Rabbi Meir unless you do something that's Kilui. Unless you eliminate the Kodesh completely, then there is violation of Me'ila. But otherwise, it remains Hekdesh, and there's no Me'ila. And that would explain Rabbi Meir's position in our Mishnah, where he says that b'mezid, the kedushin go through, b'shogeg, the kedushin fail, because they still belong to Hekdesh. And you haven't given the woman anything that belongs to you. And she also doesn't want to be a party to the chilul, to the profaning of this item. And therefore it remains kodesh. And if that's the case, then you don't have kedushin. That was our conclusion, as was brought in the name of Rabbi Yochanan yesterday. And now, Amarav, chazanu al kol tzadim shel Rabbi Meir. We went and looked at all the different viewpoints of Rabbi Meir, positions of Rabbi Meir. Lo matzinu hekdesh b'shogeg ein mitchalel, b'mezid mitchalel. We never find such a position within Rabbi Meir's statements throughout the Mishnah, the Braitot. We don't find that he believes that when it comes to hekdesh b'shogeg, if it's unintentional, there is no chilul. And if it's intentional, there is chilul, which is the conclusion that Rabbi Yochanan came to, with regards to Rabbi Meir's position in our Mishnah. And in Hochanami, if you look at our Mishnah, that's exactly what Rabbi Meir says. So what does it mean that Rav comes there? We lurked all around and we don't find it. So even though we find in our Mishnah that that is what it looks like, that is not the reasoning behind Rabbi Meir. Because if you look anywhere else within the positions of Rabbi Meir, we find no affirmation or confirmation of the fact that he believes that. And therefore, Rav here is saying that he does not hold like Rabbi Yochanan. He disagrees with Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Meir, there is mi'ilo b'ma'ot hekdesh, and since there's mi'ilo, the money goes out to chulin. And that means both b'shogeg and b'mezid, you have chilul, and since you have chilul, the kiddushin would be successful. Well, that's a problem, because in our Mishnah, it says that if you did it b'shogeg, it would not be successful. And that's what the Gemara explains now. U'mishnatenu p'katnot kihuna. The Mishnah is talking about a case of the tunics of the Kohanim, Shalom Balu, that had not been worn down yet, meaning that they're still in use. Ho v'nitnu lehanot behen, since you can get benefit from them, l'fish lo nitna Torah l'malachei asheret. Because the Torah is not given to the malachei asheret. As Rashi notes over here, it's impossible for the Kohanim to utilize the big day kuhuna and not get any benefit that is outside of their context in Avodah. When he's doing Avodah, of course, he has to wear the big day kuhuna, because we have a principle, b'zman shebigdeim aleihem kunatan aleihem. When they're wearing the bigadim, they're called kohanim. Without the bigadim, they're not called kohanim. So that gives them the status of kohanim. So while they're in the Avodah, of course, they can wear the big day kuhuna. Problem is, as soon as they finish the Avodah, we don't make them strip down immediately and take off the bigadim. There is some sort of residual time that exists there, that they're wearing the big day kuhuna. And since we're not malachim, the understanding is that the kohanim have a right to get a benefit from the katnot kihuna, even outside the context of avodah. Even if you were to tell them to take it off immediately afterwards, go into your changing room and change, the period of time between the completion of the avodah till he gets there already creates the problem that he's wearing them beyond the period that he should have. So therefore, what was established is that when it comes to the big day kuhuna, we have a looser rule versus other objects of hekdesh. Other objects of hekdesh, if you misappropriate the hekdesh, you use it for your personal benefit, then you are Moel. By the big day kahuna, because we have this more expansive view of what is considered proper usage of the big day kahuna, therefore you could use them even outside the context of Vodah and still not be Moel in the Kotrot kahuna, with the exception of the fact or the exception of the time when you do B'mezid. If you do it intentionally, then you are Moel. Intentional Me'ilah means that you want to misappropriate them. You want to use them in the wrong context. You want to ruin the holiness of these bigadim. In that case, it will be mitchalel. And even though technically this heter only really applies to Kohanim, because they're the ones who wear the big day kuna, once we've already expanded this concept that there is no mi'ilah by the big day kuna, then it extends to the zarim as well, and it becomes the status of the item rather than simply a dispensation for those that wear the big day kuna. So now, based on that explanation, our Mishnah is a case where it's speaking about using the katnot kihuna to marry as the consideration for the marriage. As we said before, Rabbi Meir now believes that whenever you misappropriate hekdesh, there is mi'ilah, and if there is mi'ilah, it goes out to chulin. So that would imply that if you use the katnot kihuna as the consideration for marriage, they should be chulin, and the marriage go through, whether it's mezid or whether it's shogeg. So b'mezid, Rabbi Meir says that in our Mishnah, that it works. B'shogeg, it doesn't work because of this principle. Because b'shogeg, katnot kuhuna, that exception to them, where misappropriation will not automatically make them into chulin, because there's a certain amount of leeway given with the katnot kuhuna. And because of that leeway, they do not automatically become chulin when you misappropriate them or you use them improperly. At least if it's unintentional. Tosafot questions now. Well then, how do you explain the shita of Rabbi Yehuda? V'im tamar, im kein hekin kamar Rabbi Yehuda. If you say our Mishnah is speaking about kotnot kuhuna, then how do you explain Rabbi Yehuda's shita? Rabbi Yehuda's shita is just the opposite of Rabbi Meir, which is b'mezid, it does not work. B'shogeg, it does work. Well, according to Rabbi Yehuda, b'shogeg, how does it work if you're talking about kotnot kuhuna, where there is no quote-unquote me'ilah, because you have more latitude to use them, you have more latitude to use them even outside of their normal utility. In addition, even according to Rabbi Meir, if we're speaking about kotnot kuhuna, the big day kuhuna is status of kli sharet. And when it comes to kli sharet in the mikdash, you can be mo'el on them, but they do not lose their kedusha. They are not profaned. So if you use them and then use them again, you'll do mi'ilah achar mi'ilah, they retain their status of kedusha. Yesh lamar, the Ayri Dotan kotnot, loy neit chanchu adayin labuda. El kedushat berek abayit. They have a status of kedushat berek abayit. These big day kuna were yet to be used for avoda. Daz ein kedushat kli sharet alehem. So they don't have yet the status of kli sharet. As we mentioned before, it happens to be a machloket as to whether you can make personal donations to the mikdash and then they be utilized for the tzibur if you relinquish control over them. So there is a machloket about this, but it seems that the Kohanim could have their big day kuna made either by their mothers, by their wives, and then they would donate them to the Mikdash. So this is in the process in which they are donating them to the Mikdash, so they are Kodesh, but they have yet to be used for Avodah, so they haven't taken on the status of Klei Sharet yet. So that will solve the problem of why B'mezid it's Mitchalel, because they have yet to become Klei Sharet. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda also, they are misappropriated here. B'shogeg, there's a possibility of it being mi'ilah because of the fact that it never reached the status of a kli sharet, and that's why possibly it would be mitchalel. So now, based on this, we have our Mishnah is really not shita to Rabbi Meir in Shas. It's unique to the case in our Mishnah, which is this case of using the big day kuna as the consideration for the marriage. We are explaining this according to Rashi. You should note that Rabbeinu Hananel says that when Rav says this, he says that Rabbi Meir believes that both Bishogeg and Mezid ain't mitchalel. There is no mi'ilah, there's no chilul, and therefore the kedushin would fail in both cases. And the exception, the rule here is the katnot kihuna, since you have the ability to use them in alternate purposes besides the avoda itself, that gives them a lower form of kedusha, and therefore that could be mitchalel. That could be profaned, and that's why, by the case of Mi'ilah B'mezid on the Katnot Kuhuna, you would be able to get married and there would be a chilul. But we're going to continue to learn the Gemara like Rashi, which is that both Bishogeg u'Mezid, Rabbi Meir believes it is mitchalel, and our mission is the exception in the case that by Shogeg it's not mitchalel because of the fact that there is this broader utility allowed with the big day kihuna. Now the Gemara challenges this understanding within Rabbi Meir's Shita, that Rabbi Meir really believes that the katnot kihuna are subject to our much wider latitude when it comes to mi'ila tashma. Katnot kihuna shibalu mo'alim ben. The big day kihuna that are worn down, you can have mi'ila with them. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That is Rabbi Meir's position. My lav afilu lo balu. What is the case here? Even if they were not worn down, it would be the same case. So why did the Braita mention balu, that they were worn down? Because you would think that the big dekuna that are worn down no longer have a status of kedusha, or they can be mitchalel. So that's why we mentioned balu. The chidush, that even though you could have said that nasta mitzvatan, they're done and they're used up already, and there's no hekdesh still with them, that's the chidush. Even balu, even though they've been utilized and they're worn out, they still have their kedusha. But that would be the same as whether they were worn down or not worn down. It says, no, balu dafka. Only if they are worn down does Rabbi Meir believe there is mi'ilah, because in that case, they're no longer usable for avoda. If they're no longer usable for avoda, you don't have this latitude to utilize them even outside of the avoda. Now, they are no longer, quote-unquote, big day kuna. They're just residually something that is left over for hekdesh. And therefore, if you get benefit from them and you misappropriate them, they would become mechulal. They'd be profaned at that time, and they would be mi'ilah. Tashma, mo'alim b'chadatin, ve'in mo'alim b'atikim. This is regards to the shkalim that are brought to the mikdash. It says in the Braita, mo'alim b'chadatin, there is mi'ilah by new shkalim, ve'in mo'alim b'atikin. There is no mi'ilah but the older shkalim. Rabbi Meir Omer, mo'alim af b'atikim. Rabbi Meir says, you even have mi'ilah by older shkalim. She'ah Rabbi Meir Omer, because Rabbi Meir is of the position. Mo'alim b'sharei alishka, that you can have mi'ilah with the leftovers of the lishka. The Tosfot here goes through this in much more detail, but we'll give a quick summary of what is being discussed here, which is that in the Mikdash every year, starting from Rosh Chodesh Adar, that's why we read Parshat Shkalim by Rosh Chodesh Adar, they started to announce that it's time for collection of the new shkalim. They began to collect the new shkalim from Rosh Chodesh Adar until Rosh Chodesh Nisan. On Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the new budgetary year began in the Mikdash, and the monies for the Korbanot HaTzibur came from the Shkalim HaChadashim, from the new shkalim that were brought during that period of time. So all the shkalim that were brought between Rosh Chodesh Adar and Rosh Chodesh Nisan, they brought them into the Lishka, into the treasury. They were collected in a location, and then they did what's called Trumat HaLishka. They took off a portion of those shkalim into three baskets, and then those were used to purchase the korbanot hatzibur. Those are called the trumat halishka. What's left behind is called shayarei halishka, the leftovers of the lishka. Those leftovers were no longer used for the korbanot hatzibur, but rather for other needs, maintenance or capital expenditures. We'll get to that in a second about what they were used for. So now, some people didn't get them there in time, and so they brought them after the first of Nisan. There was another Trumat HaLishka that was done in Rosh Chodesh Sivan. So that means that all the coins that are collected between Rosh Chodesh Nisan and Rosh Chodesh Sivan, they were included in the next separation, by which they would take off again three baskets worth of shkalim, and use those to pay for the Korbanot HaTzibur starting from Rosh Chodesh Sivan and onward. There was a third time that they did this, and that was on Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. So all the shkalim that were collected between Rosh Chodesh Sivan and Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, they were subject to this next Trumat HaLishka. Now, when you take off the Trumat HaLishka, that which is taken off is used for the Korbanot HaTzibur. That which is left behind is called Sharei HaLishka, the leftovers. Now, those leftovers are not put into the next separation. Once you've taken off the truma, the remainder now are no longer valid or viable to be used in the next separation. So you have three different times during the year where they separated out the truma talishka to pay for the korbanot tzibor. in those three times, whatever's left over, they become Sherei Lishka, and they're not included in the next separation that comes up. Those were the, what we call the Shkalim Chadashim. And if, now, what happens if, after they separated out the Shkalim, somewhere along the lines of your question, they took off the three baskets of Shkalim, and those Shkalim ran out. And now they don't have sufficient means by which to pay for the Korbanot HaTzibur. What do they do at that point in time? So Pligi Hotam, there's a Machloket in Shkalim. Tanakama Savar Yachzor V'Yitrom. That you go back and you do another truma, perish mechadatim shibo misukot at Pesach, meaning that you've done three trumot alishka, and then you've used those up, and now you're somewhere sitting between Sukkot and Pesach because we did the last one on Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, and now you wait until the next Rosh Chodesh Nisan before you take off. So now they ran out. So what do you do at that point in time? So it's a machloket. The Tana Kama believes that all new shkalim that came after Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, you go and take off a fourth Truma, even though that's normally not done. 3 is what you do normally. Here, in an emergency situation, all the shkalim that came after Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, you put them into a pile, and then you take off 3 baskets worth, and that plugs the hole in the budget. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir believes, yikach min ashirayim. You go back to the leftovers. And, meotan shebo achar shekodu shlosha pekei atumah, dahinu ben sukot l'nitzan. That you do both. You can take from the stuff that came after Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, or you can take from the leftovers. Now, as Tosfos points out, it's not clear from Rashi's interpretation whether there is mi'ilah here or not. Amnam Rabbi Yitzchak ben Avraham perish demolim bechadete. The Rabbi Yehuda aftachar kol shuma shem yitzterchu lehem besof lakrib korbanot. That according to Rabbi Yehuda, the new coins generate a problem with Me'ilah, because you might need to use them in order to bring Korbanot afterwards. So in the Tana Kama says, Hashta Sover Kamandamar Yagzor V'Yitrom, Ulukach Molim Bechadatin, Shem Yitztarchu Lehem. That by the new coins, the new Shkalim, there is Me'ilah. Because the new coins could possibly end up being utilized for Korbanot HaTzibur. And that means that they carry a certain amount of Hekdesh associated with them, or possible usage for Hekdesh. So that is, these new coins that are brought between Sukkot and Pesach, they have a possibility of ending up on the Mizbeach, and therefore they have a level of Kedusha that if you misappropriate them or misuse them, they will be subject to the rules of Me'ilah. On the other hand, when it comes to Atikim, Atikim means that which is Shairei Alishka, the leftovers in the Lishka, as well as coins that are brought a year later. And that is in the Mikdash, there were 2 Shofarot. The word shofar here is used loosely. It's a shofar because it's narrow at the top and wide at the bottom, like the stucco box, so you can't get your hand in there. Once you put it in, it's in. So there, the old shkalim are those that are brought from the previous year, or shkalim that are shayrei lishka. According to this Tana Kama, they're not subject to mi'ilah because they are utilized for items that don't have hekdesh or kedusha associated with them. And so because of that, they're not subject to Me'ilah. And that's what the Tana Kama says over here. Mo'alim b'chadatin, ve'ein mo'alim b'atikin. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir Omer, mo'alim af b'atikim. Rabbi Meir says that even the old shkalim have Me'ilah associated with them. And that is because Rabbi Meir believes, and we just saw this, that when you run out of monies in the budget for the Korbanot HaTzibur, you go back to the Shairei Alishka. You go back to the leftovers in the Lishka, and therefore they are subject to Mi'ilah, because they possibly could be used for Korbanot HaTzibur. That possibility is enough to give them a Shem Hekdesh, and you be Moel on them. Tosfos says the Gemara, in some senses, makes another quantum leap, which is, not only is that true about the Shairei Alishka, it's also true about the coins that are brought for last year's Shkalim. So that if we run out of Shairei Lishka, they would go back to those as well, according to Rabbi Meir. And therefore, they carry with them a certain amount of Hekdesh. And so, since they could possibly use Hekdesh, you could be Mo'el in these items. This is a Braita, a Gemara in Shkalim, describing a machloket between the Tana Kama and Rabbi Meir. But in Rabbi Meir's position, you see that by the Atikim, you are able to have Mi'ilah. Shaya Rabbi Meir Omer, Mo'alim b'Shairei Alishka. The reason behind Rabbi Meir's position, as we've noted before, is the fact that you can be Mo'el in Shairei Alishka, because according to Rabbi Meir, there's a possibility that Shairei Alishka could be used for Korbanot HaTzibur. And again, we're extending that and saying even the old shkalim that are brought are subject to milah because they could be used for Ekdesh. Then Tosfot notes that according to Rabbi Meir, how could it be that you're using the coins from last year to pay for the korbanot of this year? We have a rule, which is chodesh b'chodesho, that there is a month in which the budget switches over in the Mikdash, and you have to take the payment of the korbanot zibor from the new shkalim, and that's on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So how could it be that you're in the new budgetary year, and now you're using monies that were really from the previous budget year? But here the guy just brings a coin, and he's putting it to the shofar, and he says, I missed bringing my shekel in the previous year. Now I'm just putting it in because I owe the money. How can we utilize that according to Rabbi Meir? So Tosafot says something interesting. He says, "Vim tomar veichi matzil lichom atikim lekorbanot zibor abin en shuma chadasha." Veish lomar dehainu the mitzvah. That's only lechatchila. Vaheicha delo efshar avdinan. But b'diavad, you can use it. Inami. Veish lomar kemin shebo b'shana zo. Kolmar sheyal shanat mima min hava shapir kriin en beit shuma chadasha. He says, even though that these coins were owed for last year's budget, nevertheless, they only become old coins and not subject to this year's budget once a year has passed from the time that the coin was given. So even though you're bringing the coin for last year's budget, it still has a status in a b'diavad situation to be able to use for this year's budget. So that's how Tosafot gets around the problem. And he actually says he likes that answer because it helps solve another problem in the Gemara in Shkalim. So now we have here a machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Meir as to whether there is milah in the older shkalim that are brought. And the Gemara says, Rabbi Meir is of the belief that you're mo'alim b'tikim because he believes that you're mo'al b'sheri elishka. V'amai, name a hoven nutnu lehen notes, l'fish lo nitna torah l'malachei asheret. Maybe you could say here that since you can get benefit from them, and the Torah is not given to malachei asheret, then there is no mi'ilah here. Da chumata'ir u'migdolotea m'sheri elishka. Atu, the wall of the city and its towers were built out of the Sharia Lishka. As Rashi notes over here, it wasn't given to Malachi Asheret, Yuzrizim, Le'anot min achuma, Le'shev Bitzila. Nobody says you can't sit in the shade of the wall of the city of Yerushalayim because it was paid for by the Sharia Lishka. The reason being because we don't demand that people be like Malachi Asheret. Rashi seemingly indicates that it's only unintentional use of the walls. That doesn't have mi'ilah. Others, like the Ramban, suggest over here that there's no mi'ilah, whether it's b'shogeg or b'mezid. That means that once the walls are put up, they are mechuber the karka, they have a status of chulin the gamre, and there is no mi'ilah whatsoever with regards to the walls of Yerushalayim. El al korchach, av pishu traha na'ah choma, the inyan sharanot mi'u b'ktushatau ka'ime. But here you're seeing that Rabbi Meir believes that sharia lishka are subject to mi'ilah. They're subject to mi'ilah that says that anything that is built out of that money is kodesh to the point that if you got benefit from it, you would be chayav in mi'ilah. So how could you say that Rabbi Meir believes that the big day kihuna, that there's no mi'ilah because lo nitna l'malachei asheret? I have a case here where there is mi'ilah, even lo nitna l'malachei asheret. Alright, basically the Gemara is doing now, and should have been obvious by the Big Day Kuna before, is that there's a bifurcation of the din as to what Hana is allowed. Which is that by Big Day Kuna, if the coin wears it a little bit afterwards, okay, we can call that unintentional Hana, lo nitna l'malachei asheret. If the coin, on the other hand, goes ahead and utilizes them for some other purpose, then they should be subject to mi'ilah, because that has nothing to do with malachei asheret. That is simply a misappropriation of Ekdesh. That's what the Gemara is now suggesting with regards to the walls of the city. When it comes to unintentional usage of the walls of the city or going into the shade of the walls of the city, okay, fine. That's allowed. We give you latitude for that because lo nitna l'malachei asheret. Well then, if you go to the wall of the city, take the stone and build it into your house, that's going to be a misappropriation of Ekdesh. That's a misuse of Ekdesh. Even though lo nitna l'malachei asheret, because that's no longer subject to this issue of malachei asheret, even if it was done b'shogeg, that's clear misappropriation of ekdesh. It's none. We have a mishnah in Kodesh Shkolim. It says chumata yir migdot evachol tzachei yir ba'im mishari alishka. So you see, this is one of the utilities of the shari alishka, and we know about that. That of course lo nitna l'malachei asheret. Therefore, if you get benefit from the wall, nobody's going to say that you're mo'el in the wall. They have to avoid going through the shade of the wall or being protected by the wall in any way. So that can't be the case. So obviously, there is no mi'ilah in that case yet. Rabbi Meir says that Shari and Lishka are subject to Mi'ilah. If they're subject to Mi'ilah, that means that if they're misappropriated in a way that's clearly not just an unintentional benefit from the wall, then you would be subject to Mi'ilah. And we should say the same thing by the Big Day Kuhuna. It's one thing to wear them a little longer. It's another thing to try to use them to generate Kiddushin and to use them for consideration in a transaction. There clearly should be a misuse, and it should be Nitchalel. And that would, again, go against this position of Rav that suggests that Rabbi Meir believes that there is no Mi'ilah by the Big Day Kuhuna or by the Kodnot Kuhuna. Where it says, Lo Tema Rabbi Meir, Eleima Rabbi Yehuda. That position is not authored by Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah, but rather by Rabbi Yehuda. So Tosafot proves from here that the original Braita that we quoted does not have attribution to Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. You can see that in our Gemara, it's in parentheses, that it said Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, because in all likelihood, the Baal Machloket, or Baal Plut of Rabbi Meir is Rabbi Yehuda, and we know that they argue on these issues. But if you write Divrei Rabbi Yehuda here, then the Gemara over here should have concluded, Hafuch, flip their positions. Flip Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir's position. The fact that the Gemara says, don't write Rabbi Meir in the Braita, but rather write Rabbi Yehuda, makes it clear that the Gemara didn't know that Rabbi Yehuda was mentioned in the Braita, only Rabbi Meir is mentioned in the Braita. And from that, as you can see, the last Tosfot says over here, that they eliminated from the Girsa Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, and that's what Rabbeinu Tam did, and that's why Divrei Rabbi Yehuda in our Gemara is in parentheses. So Gemara says that it's not Rabbi Meir, Ela Eima Rabbi Yehuda. We now attribute the Shita of what is Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah to Rabbi Yehuda, then we don't have this problem, because we know that Rabbi Yehuda believes that by the cases of Shogeg, there is Mi'ilah. And therefore, if you use the Shari Alishka for the Chomat Ha'ir, and you do something, you use the stones for something other than getting shade out of them, which would be a normal, unintentional use, then it would be Mitchalel and it would be Mi'ilah. And that would be understandable then, why the Shari Alishka are subject to Mi'ilah, because even B'Shogeg, there is Mi'ilah according to Rabbi Yehuda's position. Now, obviously, Rabbi Yehuda in this case would then have to be of the opinion like Rabbi Meir, who says that the Sharia Lishka are subject to Mi'ilah because they are utilized for items that have Hekdesh or Kodesh associated with them. Gemara moves along, we're going to see that more clearly, that you have to believe that whatever you're using the Sharia Lishka for retain their Kedusha, and since they retain their Kedusha, there is Mi'ilah. If you believe that the Sharia Lishka are used for items that are not, or do not retain their Kedusha, then they would not be subject to Mi'ilah, because by definition they're being used for capital improvements or maintenance that is not kadosh. If that's the case, then you can't be mo'el in them because they don't retain their level of kedusha. The Gemara solved the problem of this shita Rabbi Meir by attributing it to Rabbi Yehuda instead. Tashma, the Tanya, I'm Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Yitzchak. Avnei Yerushalayim shenishru mo'elim behem. The stones of Yerushalayim that are pulled out of the wall, they have or are subject to mi'ilah, divrei Rabbi Meir. So once again, now it seems again that Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that the walls of the city are subject to Mi'ilah, even though lo ninu the Malachi Asharet. Lo teima Rabbi Meir, eleima Rabbi Yehuda. Again, the Gemara says, change the attribution there in that statement. It's not Rabbi Meir, but it is Rabbi Yehuda. So what you're coming down to now is that the principle of lo ninu Malachi Asharet, how expansive is that? According to Rav, Rabbi Meir's view of lo ninu Malachi Asharet means that once you have that principle in place, Bishogeg, at least you can't be Moel in that object. Even if you misappropriate it for something not related to what would be normal usage or the normal expansion of what you're allowed to do with these Big Day Kuhuna. So like Big Day Kuhuna, where you wear them, if you wear them beyond the time, that's lo nidna l'malchei asharet. But according to Rabbi Meir now, Lefi Rav, that means that even if you try to generate Kiddushin with them, they're also not subject to Mi'ilah. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda, the way that we're explaining here, believes that lo nidna malachei asharet is when you're doing something that's related to the ikar purpose of this object. So you're wearing Big Day Kuhuna. If you wear them a little longer, there you're not subject to mi'ilah. If you use them for a totally different purpose, like consideration for kiddushin, there you would be subject to mi'ilah. And similar with the walls of the city. According to Rabbi Meir, since you can get benefit from the shade of the walls of the city, because lo nidna malachei asharet, that means also, when you misappropriate the stones of the wall, you would not be subject to Mi'ilah. According to Rabbi Yehuda, yes, that's true by the shade of the walls, because that's what the walls were built for. They provide shade, they provide protection. So that's an unintentional benefit that is what the walls are there for. On the other hand, if a stone is taken out of the wall or falls out of the wall and then you use it, you would be subject to Mi'ilah B'Shogeg, because that's not part of the Malachi Asharet. So far, Rav's position with the Rabbi Meir, we've supported by simply changing the position of Rabbi Meir in these cases with the Shari Alishka and the stones of the wall to be attributed to Rabbi Huda instead. Rabbi Huda, Yishlaimi Mikacho. Okay, wait a minute. Now we run into a problem, because the underlying assumption, I noted this to you before, that is that if Rabbi Huda believes there's Mi'ilah here, it has to be that you believe that the Shari Alishka are being used for things that retain their Kedusha. Or in essence, the walls of Yerushalayim retain their Kedusha after you spend the Shari Alishka on them, they remain Kadosh. That has to be your fundamental belief, otherwise there's no Mi'ilah. If they are Chulin, you can't be Mo'el in Chulin. So therefore, your assumption is that Rabbi Huda believes that these things are Kadosh. Vatznan. Don't we have a Mishnah? Ki Imra, ki Dirim, ki Etzim, ki Ishim, ki Heichal, ki Mizbeach, ki Yerushalayim. Rabbi Huda Omer, kol Omer Yerushalayim, lo Amar Klum. This is in Nedarim. In Nedarim, the Iker way to generate a Neder is to be Matpis, which means that you connect it to something that was made Asur or made Kadosh, and you say, I want this object to be just like this other object. So if you say, I want this object to be Ki'imra, like the Korbanot that are in the Migdash, or like the animals that are waiting for Korbanot, so you're trying to be Matpis the items. So all these items are items that you are Magdish, so therefore they're items that you generate Kedusha in them, and when you're being Matpis, you're trying to now extrapolate or extend that Kedusha to another object and say, just like these items are Kadosh now, or Asur, so do I want this food, or I want this drink to be Asur. That's called Hatpasa, and it works. Rabbi Yehuda over there says, all of those work except for Yerushalayim. What's the reason? Obviously, because Yerushalayim is not Kadosh. It's not something that you make Hekdesh. It's not something that remains Kadosh. Maybe you want to see the failure here, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is that you didn't use the Kaf HaDimyon. That is a machloket in the Mishnayot and Nidarim as to whether if you use the Kaf HaDimyon or you need the Kaf HaDimyon. So what are you going to suggest here? That Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the failure here is that he said Yerushalayim and not Ki Yerushalayim. Because it says Rabbi Omer, Kol Omer Yerushalayim without the Kaf HaDimyon, it doesn't work. So maybe you'll say it's not because Yerushalayim is not Kadosh, it's because he didn't use the Kaf HaDimyon. Had he used the Kaf HaDimyon, it would have worked, and Yerushalayim is Kadosh. The answer to that is, V'chiteim HaMishum D'Lamar Ki Yerushalayim V'atanya, we have a Braita. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kol Omer Ki Yerushalayim Lo Amar Klum. So here it's clear, even if you use the Kaf HaDimyon, Rabbi Yehuda believes it doesn't work. Until you take a neder with something that is brought as a korban in Yerushalayim. You have to make your neder be mutpas with something that is made kadosh, something that retains its kedusha, not Yerushalayim itself, which does not have this kedusha. So we have a problem now, because how could you attribute all of these brightot and Mishnayot to Rabbi Yehuda and assume that he's the author of these Mishnayot that say you can be Moel in the walls of Yerushalayim? If he believes that Yerushalayim is not Kadosh for you to be Matpis in the Nether, it's certainly not Kadosh for you to have Mi'ilah with it. Now, obviously Yerushalayim is Kadosh, big Dusha that you're allowed to eat the Korbanot of Kodshim Kalim there and Maaser Sheni there. We're not talking about the Dusha that is associated with the Shechinah, we're talking about the physical parts of Yerushalayim. Do they retain a certain amount of Kedusha? Meaning that the walls of the city, things that are used or paid for by the Shari Alishka, do they maintain their Kedusha after you've paid for them and you've built them? Does the wall remain Kadosh? Or is the wall now a wall like any other walled city? And the wall is Chulin. Yes, it's paid for, but through the Shari Alishka, that's a Tznai Beit Din, or that is implicit in the Shkalim that are given. But once you've paid for it, they are Chulin. And that's it. So now, from this Mishnah in the Dorim, it seems that Rabbi Yehuda believes that Yerushalayim has no residual Kedusha when you paid for items to be built inside of Yerushalayim. So then, how are you going to attribute all these things to Rabbi Yehuda? The Gemara says, no problem. We have two Tanaim that argue within the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. So whether Rabbi Yehuda believes that the walls of Yerushalayim retain their Kedusha, or they don't retain their Kedusha. Now, there is a fundamental question that you could ask over here. If you're already going to suggest that these are two Tanaim, Alita to Rabbi Yehuda, you could have just as easily said the same thing with Rabbi Meir, and say, Trei Tanaye, Alita to Rabbi Meir. Before, we ran into a problem when Rav said, oh, Rabbi Meir's Shita is that by Shogeg, there is no Mi'ilah, by Kotnot Kuna, or, let's suggest, by the walls of Yerushalayim, because Lo Nidna L'Malachei Asharet. Then we find Mishnayot, or Braitot. We find Braitot that say Rabbi Meir thinks there is Me'ilah in the walls of Yerushalayim. So just answer, Trei Tanei, Aliba, the Rabbi Meir. And you could have solved the problem that way. Why does the Gemara then go, oh no, we have Rabbi Yehuda. And then we have Trei Tanei, Aliba, the Rabbi Yehuda. Because in giving attribution to Rabbi Yehuda, you run into the same problems that you have a stira within Rabbi Yehuda's position as well. So Rabbi Yehuda believes in one place there's no Kedushah to the walls of Yerushalayim. And attributing this position to him in the other place, he says that he does think there is Kedushah to the walls of Yerushalayim. The reason is because in the Gemara, in the Nedarim, we are forced to say that Trei Tanei Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda for another reason. Totally independent of this. So we already know that there is a machloket within the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Nothing to do with our question over here. So since the Gemara already has a reason to split Rabbi Yehuda's position, say there's machloket within Rabbi Yehuda's position, so again, over here, to do it again is not a big deal because we've already set that precedent because of another question. For Rabbi Meir, we don't have such a precedent or we don't have such an indication that there were Tanaim arguing within the position of Rabbi Meir. We seemingly think that Rabbi Meir's position is consistent. For that reason, the Gemara was more willing or apt to say, Tanae, Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda, and not say that within the Shita of Rabbi Meir, even though that would have been a good answer. In the Shita of Rabbi Meir, they're comfortable doing it in Rabbi Yehuda, they're not comfortable doing it in the Shita of Rabbi Meir. So here we end with that, the Shita of Rav, who argued on Rabbi Yochanan, and it says that when it comes to Rabbi Meir's position in our Mishnah, it's an exception to the rule. The rule is that both by Mezid, by Shogeg, you can have Mi'ilah and your Mitchalel, you profane the item, and if you married with it, it would work. Our Mishnah is an exception because it's talking about Katnot Kehuna, which have a principle of lo nitna l'malachei asharet. They have more latitude where if you get benefit from them, they're not subject to mi'ilah because of the fact that you wear them past the point of avodah, and we give you more latitude there. And that's the reason why by shogeg, there's no kiddushin in our Mishnah, because there's no mi'ilah. No mi'ilah, there's no chulin, and therefore there's no kiddushin. B'mezid, when you do it intentionally, of course, there's clearly chilul. And since there is chilul, then the kiddushin go through. That is the shita of Rav, as opposed to the shita of Rabbi Yochanan we saw yesterday. Now the Gemara says, Amar Ula Mishmei de Barpada. Ula brought in the name of Barpada, Omer Hamari Rabbi Meir. Now this is the shita of Rabbi Meir. And as Rashi notes over here, Barpada Poliga de Rav. Barpada argues on Rav, Vesri like Rabbi Yochanan, and he holds like Rabbi Yochanan. I mean, and here we have another corroboration of Rabbi Yochanan's position, and it makes sense. Ula comes from Eretz Yisrael a lot of times. And here he's bringing it from Barpada, but it's possible that he also had heard this from Yochanan as well. It seems to be that this is consistent with the position of Rabbi Yochanan. Hekdesh, when it comes to Hekdesh, Bezin mitchalel, b'shogeg ein mitchalel. That when you do it intentionally, misappropriate it, then it's profaned, and of course, Kedushin would go through, but it's profane. B'shogeg ein mitchalel. When it comes to shogeg, you cannot profane it. V'lo amru b'shogeg mitchalel, aliyin en kurban bilvad. And the only thing it's profane for is the fact that you are chayav for a kurban. So now, Bar Pada's position is that if a person misappropriates Hekdesh B'Shogeg, they will be subject to a Korban Me'ilah, because they were Mo'el. On the other hand, it will not be Mitchalel, it will not be profaned. So you will have a din by which you could be Chayav in Me'ilah, Korban Me'ilah, but yet it still will retain its Kedushah. The Gemara asks, V'chi Machar Dein Mitchalel Korban B'may Mechayiv. If there is no chulin over here, then why is there a korban? The machloket basically revolves around the question of whether mi'ilah is determined by the outcome, by the results of your action, or the intent of what you did. So, according to the questioner, it's clear here that he believes that you have to see the results of what you did. If the result of what you did is that the hekdesh went to chulin, then you're subject to mi'ilah, because you then were michalel the kodesh. On the other hand, for Bar Pada, because you misused it or misappropriated it, that's enough to subject you to Mi'ilah, even though in the resultant outcome, there is no Chulin. The object didn't switch to Chulin. So that's the nature of the question over here. Elikiyat Ravin Parish Mishmei de Bar Pada. So now we have an emendation of this Shita Bar Pada. Omer Rabbi Meir, Ekdesh B'mezid Mitchalel, B'shogeg Ein Mitchalel. So again, the same statement. V'lo Amru B'shogeg Mitchalel Alinyan Achila Bilvad. So now instead of saying that it's for Korban, he comes up with a case where there is Mi'ilah B'Shogeg. We already noted this in yesterday's daf, that when you have a Hanav Kilui, if you have a Hanav where the item is not just utilized, but in a sense, is destroyed in that way, or you get enough from it, that would be subject to mi'ila. Rashi says achila means lav dafka achila. It means any hana'ah, where you're getting a benefit, where you're not simply expending the money. So when you expend the money, the principle that we saw before is that wherever the money is, it remains hekdesh. Since the money never changed from hekdesh, that's why you're not subject to mi'ila, and that's why it's not mitchalel. Because hekdesh or God exists everywhere, and therefore the money, wherever it is remains or retains its kedusha. On the other hand, by achila, when you're getting hanah from it, over there, that hanah is michalel, that profanes the item, and that subjects you to mi'ila. So Rashi says that we look at that loosely. It doesn't mean achila literally, it just means anything besides expenditures where you get hanah from the money. So for instance, if you use the money as a counterweight in a transaction, then you would also be subject to mi'ila because you got hanah from it. It wasn't you were expending the money. You were using the money as an object of hana'ah. Wow. So there are others that take achila more literally and say that achila is a hana'ah shel kilui. It's a hana'ah not only where you get hana'ah, but it's a hana'ah where the item is eliminated from the world. And that's the way I explained it yesterday. That it's hana'ah shel kilui is the exception to the rule. That when you will be subject to mi'ila is when you utilize the item and the item no longer exists because you got hana'ah from it. And so there are rishonim that say exactly what you're suggesting here, that achila is literal. I think you could argue within Rashi that he is saying the same thing, because Rashi says, Hu adin ladlaka ner, odocho hana'ah. Rashi's example of another form of hana'ah is the lighting of a candle. He afterwards says, odocho hana'ah. So that's why people say that Rashi is giving a very broad definition. But the one example he brings is ner, which is similar to achila, which is a hana'ah shel kilui. You're burning the shemen of Ekdesh. You're doing something that is kilui. So if you say Rashi, when he says the chol hana'ah is extending that, you could even read that into Rashi and say Rashi also requires hana'ah shel kilui. He's saying not literally achila, but other things that look like achila. He's not just saying eating is the only thing. It's anything that looks like eating has that din. So whether you say that means just hana'ah or you mean hana'ah shel kilui, that's subject to this machloket. Tosfot over here says, with regards to the inyan al chila, he brings that other position, which is how do not get chila lav dafka doing them ayash shem dekdesh vidlik boner demolish every kilo utam in olam. So he makes it clear that it's not just hana'ah, it's hana'ah shel kiloi. Again, I think you could read that into Rashi, but Tosfot makes it clear that the hana'ah here means hana'ah shel kiloi. Tosfot then asks, well then why are you moel by shkalim chadatim when you use the new shkalim in the mikdash? Why is there mi'ila with regards to those shkalim? Because there is no kilui. There's hana'ah, but there's no hana'ah shel kilui. Veshlamar, the otam nami ari shishakal kenegdam bishkalot shenenem igufa shkalim, vavi kumo achila. Vloata le mi'utei hotza'ah. So then Tosfot in the second half here seems to back away from saying that it has to be hana'ah shel kilui and says that it just has to be hana'ah. And since you got hana'ah from it, you use it as a counterweight instead of spending the money. Over there, you would be subject to mi'ila, even though it's not a hana'ah shel kilui. That is the emendation of Rarpada's din, which is that you can't get mi'ila unless there is chulin. How do you generate chulin over here? You have to have a hana'ah from it. What type of hana'ah? That's what we just discussed. But that is the way that you can have mi'ila, according to Rabbi Meir. Shita, similar to what Rabbi Yochanan said, which is that if you simply expend the money b'shogeg, there is no mi'ila. The money remains kadosh. And therefore, there is no mi'ila. There's no mi'ila, there's no chulin. And that means you can't use it for kiddushin. That's why it fails in our Mishnah. When you do it b'shogeg in our Mishnah, it fails. Whereas, if you ate it, or you got hana'ah from it, where there is either a kilui or a hana'ah from it, in that instance, you would be subject to mi'ila. In that case, obviously, if it went to chulin, then you could utilize it. If you utilize it for kiddushin, it would work, assuming that it's still around. If it's hana'ah shel kilui, then it's not even a question, because there will never be a case where you can have mi'ila b'shogeg and you'll end up using it for consideration of a marriage. So Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Adar Ba'ava, Halacha ki Rabbi Meir b'maaser. The halacha in our Mishnah is like Rabbi Meir with regards to Ma'aser Sheni. Ho v'stam lan tana kavate. Because we have a stam Mishnah that supports Rabbi Meir's position. V'halacha ki Rabbi Yehuda b'hekdesh. And the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda b'hekdesh. Ho v'stam lan tana kavate. Because we find a stam Mishnah that supports Rabbi Yehuda with regards to Hekdesh. So just to jog our memory, with regards to Rabbi Yehuda and Hekdesh, he believes that by Mezid, there is no Kiddushin. By Shogeg, there is Kiddushin. That's what he says in the Mishnah. The Gemara is going to now prove that we have a Stam Mishnah that supports that position of Rabbi Yehuda. We have yet to explain fully Rabbi Yehuda's position, and that will come out in the understanding of where we find the Stam Mishnah, what is the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir, with regards to Maisu Sheni, Ben Bishogeg, Ben Mezid, Lo Kidesh, Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that when it's Shogeg or Mezid by Maisu Sheni, it doesn't work because he believes it's Mamon Gevoa. It belongs to God. Since it belongs to God, you can't utilize it for your own personal benefit. We saw in the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda that he believed that it was Mamon Balim, that it belongs to Balim, and therefore you could utilize it. Now, the only question was, then why Bishogeg does it not work? That we discussed in yesterday's daf, because either the parties or one of the parties does not accept it, because had they known, they would be unwilling to accept it. And since they'd be unwilling to accept it, it doesn't work as consideration for the marriage. So here, the Gemara says that, in terms of Alocha, we're going to split between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir within the Mishnah, because we find evidence that supports either their positions in other places in Shas. So now, the Gemara says, Ki Rabbi Meir Remeiser, where do we find a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Meir Remeiser? Mahi. It's not Kerem Revai. When it comes to the fruits in the fourth year. Now the word Kerem Revai is subject to a machloket. That's what the Mishnah uses, that an orchard in its fourth year. In the first 3 years, the fruits are Orla. In the fourth year, they're subject to Revai. There is a machloket as to whether Kerem Revai is taken literally, and Revai is only applicable by Kramim, or Kerem Revai is a loose term for Revai, and it means that Netta Revai. It means that even by cases of non-Kramim, there is also a fourth year, there is a din of Netta Revai, that it has a broader definition, and Kerem Revai is just an example, but not the definitive or unique, exclusive case of Revai. The din of Revai is that, it says, it's this week's Parsha, Pashat Kiddushim, it says that, U'bishana revi'it, yeh kol pirio, kodesh hilulim la'ashem, that they are holy, and hilulim la'ashem, whatever that means. We don't have any definition of what kodesh hilulim la'ashem means. We have a gzeirah shavah of kodesh between Revai and Maisur Sheni. And therefore, Revai basically takes on the character of Maisur Sheni and has the rules of Maisur Sheni. How much it has the rules of Maisur Sheni is about to be discussed here in the Mishnah that's upcoming, Machloka between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. But in general, din of Revai is the same as Maisur Sheni. So now, Beit Shammai Omrim, Ein lo chomesh ve'ein lo biur. When it comes to Maisur Sheni, there is a rule that if the owner of the Maisur Sheni redeems it, he has to add on an additional fifth. It's also subject to Bi'ur Maisrot, which means after the 3-year cycle of Maisrot, in the fourth year you do Vidui Maisur, and you have to eliminate all the Maisrot from your house. What Rabbi Shammai says is, yes, there is a Gezeirah Shavah with Kerem Revai and Maisur Sheni, but not to the fullest extent. Those rules that apply to Maisur Sheni, that the owner adds on a Chomesh, and that there's a Bi'ur in the cycle of Maisur Sheni, that's not true by Kerem Revai. Beit Hillel Omim, Yeshlo. Beit Hillel says, no, it's exactly like Maisur Sheni. If the owners redeem it, add on a fifth. After the cycling years of the Maisurot, you got to eliminate it. Beit Shnamei Omim, Yeshlo Peret, Yeshlo Ololot. Again, this week's Parsha. The Matnot Aniyim in a Kerem match or are similar to that which is found in the field, plus it has extra Matnot. So first of all, you have Peret, which is things that fall at the time of the bitzira. Things that fall at the time that you are harvesting the grapes. You have a similar din with regards to grains, which is leket. When the stuff falls away, then that belongs to Aniim. Peret is the equivalent for the kerem of leket. On the other hand, it also has ololot. Ololot are grapes that are not part of a cluster of grapes. They have what's called lo natef velo katef. That's the way the Mishnah describes it. They do not have a drop and they don't have a shoulder. The meaning of that is that they are found as bodedim, as individual grapes. They're not grapes that are part of a cluster with other clusters sitting around it. So these individual grapes, those are also left as matnot aniyim. What Beit Shammai says is that Kerem Revai is subject to matnot aniyim because only things that belong to you are subject to matnot aniyim. Things that belong to Hashem are not subject to the matnot aniyim. Over here, what he says is not true by Kerem Revai. Bitel Omim, Kulo Degat. Everything goes to the press, meaning that there are no Matnot Aniim. My time in the Beit Hillel. What is the reasoning behind Beit Hillel's sheet over here? Gamri Kodesh, Kodesh, Mimaser. They learn out the Gzer Shavah of Maaser, and it is exempt from Matnot Aniim because things that belong to Hashem are not subject to the Matnot Aniyim. Beit Shammai doesn't agree that you have this, they just don't think it goes to the fullest extent. Because otherwise we don't know what the meaning of Kodesh Yilulim Hashem is. But Beit Hillel believes that when you say Kodesh Kodesh, we means it fully looks like, completely looks like Maaser Sheni. Ma Maaser Yesh Lo Chomesh Yesh Lo Biur, Av Kerem Rivai Yesh Lo Chomesh Yesh Lo Biur. Beit Shammai Lo Gamri Kodesh Kodesh Mi Maaser. They don't learn out that Gezeres Shava. Again, not to the fullest extent, they probably do have the Gezeres Shava. Beit Hillel Mim Ke Maaser. Beit Hillel says that it is like Maaser. Keman Sviru. Who do they hold like? Iker Rabbi Yehuda Amai Kulo Legat. Amar, Maser Mamon Ejotu. If they hold like Rabbi Yehuda, why is the whole thing ending up in the press? If you remember, we had a machloket in the Mishnah between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir as to what is the status of Maaser Sheni. According to Rabbi Meir, it's Mamon Gvoa, belongs to God. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it belongs to Mamon Balim. It's the money of the Balim. Well, if Maaser Sheni is Mamon Balim, and Kerem Ravai looks exactly like Maaser Sheni, that means the Kerem Ravai is also, is Mamon Balim. If it's Mamon Balim, it should be subject to Matnot Aniyim. And then, you can make Kaddish and Isha with it. If that's the case, then Beit Hillel is clearly not holding like Rabbi Yehuda. El Olav Ke Rabbi Meir. He's holding like Rabbi Meir. Now, even though that's not a Stam Mishnah, you have Machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, nevertheless, Beit Hillel B'Makom Beit Shammai is the equivalent of a Stam Mishnah, because we always pass an Halacha Ke Beit Hillel. So the fact that Beit Hillel takes up the position of Rabbi Meir with regards to Maaser Sheni, tells us that the halacha is like Rabbi Meir with regards to Maaser Sheni. Tosfot over here, and many of the Rishonim ask a question as to why you need the Gezeres Shava between Kerem Revai and Maaser Sheni, because the Gemara itself learns from the word Hilulim that first you have to be Achle, you have to redeem it, and then you can eat it. So you learn it out, they learn it out from the Kodesh Hilulim itself. Why do you need a Gezeres Shava to teach you the same din that it's like Maaser Sheni? So Tosafot gives two answers. V'yesh lomar, t'im gzeir shavu yevadina and the pidyon revai noeg ela bezman shemaaser sheni noeg v'lo b'shana shlishit. If you only had the gzeir shavu, you would have thought that maaser sheni only applies in the first and second year, not in the third year of the shmita cycle. In the fourth and fifth year, not in the sixth year. So too, kerem revai will only apply in the first and second year, in the fourth and fifth year. So that's why I need the additional limud from Hilulim itself. Or Inami, Avamina, Maida Chazit, the Gemar Mimaser Nelif Mishvit. There's also a possibility that you could learn Kerem Revai out of Shvit instead of Maaser Sheni. How do I know to lean towards Maaser Sheni and not to Shvit? Because it says Hilulim, that has the same din, that you can be Podet, that you can redeem it. Unlike Shvit, where you can't redeem the item, it's Nitpas. When you redeem the Shvit, the original item remains Kadosh, and so does the money that you transfer the Kedusha onto. So therefore, for one of those two reasons, the Gemara needs both Gzer Shava to bring it, compare it to Maaser Sheni, but also the Limud by the Revai itself to tell you that this din of Revai is either not comparing it to Shvit, but to Maaser Sheni, or to tell you that it's not exactly like Maaser Sheni. It's not only in the years of Maaser Sheni, it applies in all the years, including the third year, the sixth year, and even in the Shemitah year itself. And so now, the Gemara continues and says, okay, Rabbi Yehuda be'agdesh mahi. What's the Stam Mishnah that supports Rabbi Yehuda with regards to his view of Agdesh? That's none. Shelach biyad pikeach v'nizkar. If he sends the Hekdesh, the Gizbar sends the money of Agdesh with a person who is of sound mind, v'nizkar, and he remembers actually gia itzel chenvani before it reaches the storekeeper. Chenvani ma'al. Then the Chenvani is Mo'el over here, because the Chenvani is the only one who doesn't know. As to be a case, as Rashi notes over here, where the Shaliach also remembers. So the Gizbar remembers, the Shaliach remembers, they give it to the Chenvani, and then the Chenvani utilizes it, meaning that in his business, he is the one, Chenvani Ma'al, Kishiyotzi. When he expends it and he utilizes it, he is the Mo'el. So it's clear there that the Gizbar is exempt, and so is the Shaliach exempt, because they are Mezidim. They know that the money is money of Ekdesh, and therefore they're not subject to Mi'ilah. On the other hand, the Chenvani, who's the only one who's unaware and unintentionally does it, he is subject to Mi'ilah. So what you see here is that by Mezid, there is no Mi'ilah. By Shogeg, there is Mi'ilah, which is Rabbi Yehuda's position in our Mishnah. Then in the case of Mezid, there is no Kiddushin. By the case of Shogeg, there is Kiddushin, because by the case of Shogeg, you have Mi'ilah. So here is Rabbi Yehuda Shita, which we never saw before. Here is the explanation of
Rabbi Yehuda's shita, which is that mi'ilah. There is a shita that mi'ilah is only applicable by shogeg and not by mezid. And because mi'ilah is only applicable by shogeg and not by mezid, there's only chilul by shogeg and not by mezid. And for that reason, there's only marriage when you do it by shogeg and not when you do it by mezid. Now, even though the beginning of that Mishnah we just quoted says, shilach biyad cheresh shoteh v'katan, sends it to cheresh shoteh v'katan, if they did their shlichutan, the gizbar is mo'el. If they didn't do their shlichut, then lomal, then he doesn't get, then he's not subject to mi'ilah. Tosfot asks over here, why didn't the Gemara bring the proof from the beginning of that Mishnah? Because over there, when they do their shlichutan, the gizbar is subject to mi'ilah. If they didn't do their shlichutan, then the chenvani is the one who ends up being the mo'el. So again, there you see that bishogeg is the case when you're chayav bikuran mi'ilah. So he says that the only proof you can bring for that first half of the mission is that bishogeg, it's mitchalel. But it doesn't tell you anything about mezid. What's the status of mezid? The second half of the Mishnah, which is what we quote over here, shows you that not only bishogeg is it mitchalel and you're subject to mi'ilah, because that's the chenvani, but mezid, it's not mitchalel, because you see that the gizbar and the shliach, when they remember, they're not subject to mi'ilah, and there's no chilul in that case. So that's why the Gemara brought the proof from the second half of the Mishnah and not the first half of that Mishnah. Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda b'maser mi lo tnan. Don't we also have a stam Mishnah that supports Rabbi Yehuda's position with regards to maser? V'atznan. Puder maser sheni. Someone who redeems maser sheni shalo, mosif alav chamishato. He has to add on a fifth. Ben mishalo, ben mishinetan lo b'matana. That's whether it's his maser sheni or whether it was given to him as a gift. Mani, who's the author of this Mishnah? Ilema Rabbi Meir he. If you say it's Rabbi Meir, mi matziyav ilema matana. How could you get it as a gift? Amar maser mamon gavoh. El olav Rabbi Yehuda. It is Rabbi Yehuda. It's not your mamon. It's mamon gavoh. It belongs to God. You can't gift something that belongs to God. If it's mamon balim, then you can gift the maser sheni to someone else. So now you have a Mishnah that's clearly authored by Rabbi Yehuda because he's the only one who has that position that maser sheni is mamon balim. And that's why there can be a matana. That's a stam Mishnah that says Maiser Sheni is Mamon Balim. So why are you telling me we have a stam Mishnah that supports Rabbi Meir? You have a stam Mishnah that also supports Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara says, "Lo, the Olam Rabbi Meir, the author of that Mishnah is Rabbi Meir." V'halchum ma'iskina gondiayv ni'alei b'tivlei. He gave it to him before the Maiser Sheni was taken off of it, because Sabar and Rabbi Meir holds matnot shlohumu k'mish shlohumur damin. That before the matanot are taken off the tevel, they don't have a status of matanot. This is a machloket that we've seen in other places as to whether when the item is in its status of tevel, before the required tithes are taken off of it, what is its status? Is it tevel? And that is its status. Its status is called tevel. Or do we say it's really made up of component parts? There's some truma in there. There's some truma masa in there. There's some maaser sheni in there. It's not separated out. So it's tevel. It's all mixed together. But it's not an entity called Tevel. The Tevel is just a description of all the items that are mixed together. The difference would be is the Maiser Sheni that is embedded in the Tevel, is it already Maiser Sheni separate enough that you cannot gift it because it's Mamon Gvoa? Or is the Maiser Sheni not identifiable as a separate entity from the Tevel that it's not subject to this? So what the Gemara is saying here, that this is Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir will also believe that Tevel does not have enough shame Maiser Sheni associated with it that it is Mamon Gvoa, and therefore you can gift the Tevel. And when they're saying they're gifting it, it means he was gifted Tevel. And was gifted Tevel, and then takes the Maaser Sheni off of it afterwards, it's subject to the rule that you have to add on a Chomesh. Because when it was given in Tevel, it wasn't Maaser Sheni. If it's not Maaser Sheni, it's not Mamon Gvoa yet. Tashma, ha-pudeh neter revai shelo. Someone redeems his neter revai, mosif alav chamishato. He has to add on a fifth. Ben mishelo, ben shnitan lo matana. Again, a case where it's his, or it was given to him as a gift. Mani, who's the author of this? Either Rabbi Meir, me, Matzi, Ayivlei. How can you give it as a gift? Val gamrei kodesh, kodesh maser. We hold halacha is like Rabbi Beit Hillel, that we learn out the gzer shava from Maaser Sheni. And if Maaser Sheni is mamon gvoa, so is kerem revai mamon gvoa. So how could you gift it? And obviously this Tana has to learn the gzer shava of a kodesh, kodesh, because otherwise how would he know that you have to pay a fifth by kerem revai? You would only have to pay a fifth by Netzer Revai because you learned it out from Maaser Sheni. So you see the fact that he connects it to Maaser Sheni. If he connects it to Maaser Sheni, then it should have the same rules as Maaser Sheni. If it's Rabbi Meir and it's Mamon Gvoa, then you shouldn't be able to gift it. Elalai Rabbi Yehuda. Again, it's Rabbi Yehuda. Now you have a Stam Mishnah again that supports Rabbi Yehuda's position that it's Mamon Balim. Olam Rabbi Meir. Bachamai Skinan. What's the case here? Can't give the same answer we gave before. It's tevel, because netter avai doesn't have a status of tevel. Netter avai is its status as it comes off the tree. When the fruit is picked off the tree, it's a status of netter avai immediately. So how come I skin go to elhu sheyayiv shu smadar? He gave it when it was a smadar. The smadar is the status of the fruit in its early stages of emerging. Meaning that we have the blossom. After the blossom falls away, there is a small fruit that is there. That small fruit is likely around where the smadar is. It's obviously not edible. It's sour and you can't eat it, but that's the emergence of the fruit. It's called the smadar. The question as to when the item gains the status of netter avai, where does that start? Does it only start when it reaches the status of a fruit, or is that even from the status of a smadar? So what the Gemara is suggesting now is that Rabbi Meir believes that it only gains the status of netter avai once it's more fully developed. When it's a smadar, it doesn't have a din of netter avai because it's too early in the maturation stages. But look, Rabbi Yossi, that's against Rabbi Yossi's position, damar smadar asur mipnei shu pri. That Rabbi Yossi believes that by orla, smadar is already asur because it's a fruit. And fruits in their first 3 years are subject to orla. So a smadar already has the status of a fruit. Because the status of fruits is subject to orla, it's also subject to netter avai. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir is going to argue on that and say that a smadar is not yet considered to be a fruit. Since it's not yet a fruit, it doesn't have a status of netter avai yet, and you could gift it at that point because it's not mamon gavoa yet. It hasn't matured enough to be called a pri and to be subject to netter avai, which is compared to maaser sheni, which is mamon gavoa. Never the gifting was done in an early enough stage where it doesn't have a status of a fruit. Now, you can't do it before that point because it's davar shelo ba'li olam. Can't do it after that point because it's already a pri. So that's at that particular point where it's a davar shelo ba'li olam, but has yet to gain the status of a pri, that's when he gifted it. And that's how we'll answer that the authorship there could be even according to Rabbi Meir. Tashma. Mashachim menu maser b'sela. He buys, he redeems the maaser sheni with a sela. Lois speak liftoto, and he doesn't succeed at redeeming it, ad shamad b'shtayim, until the price goes up. Notein sela, umistaker b'sela. He pays his sela that he had agreed to before, and he benefits for a sela. The appreciation is with the buyer. So here the buyer wanted to buy the maaser sheni off this individual who's going to redeem it. He doesn't pay the money yet, but he does a mishicha, does a kinyan mishicha on the fruits. Then when he comes to pay, the price has gone up. But the fruits, he already made a kinyan on them, they're in his possession. So his payment or his money that he pays is the original price that they agreed to, one sela. Even though they're worth two sela now. Maaser sheni shelo, and he keeps the maaser sheni. Ilema Rabbi Meir, who's the author of that Mishnah? If it's Rabbi Meir, am I mistaker b'sela? Why does the benefit accrue to the buyer over here? Bob, don't we have a principle? Natana kesef v'kamlo, marachmana. We learned this earlier in the Masechta, that as far as Hekdesh is concerned, the transaction is only completed when you pay the money. Until you pay the money, it remains in the possession of Hekdesh. So that's the case here. If Maaser Sheni is Mamon Gvoa, and is yet to pay for the redemption, even though he made a kinyan on it, it should still be in Hekdesh's possession. That means that the benefit should accrue to the seller, or basically the Maaser Sheni itself, and not the buyer over here. Ella, it must be Ella Lav Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda must be the author of the Mishnah. Gemara says, you're right, Lolam Rabbi Yehuda. It is authored by Rabbi Yehuda, because over here we can't come up with an explanation, because it's clear here that Maaser Sheni is Mamon Balim, and we have a Stam Mishnah that supports Rabbi Yehuda. V'hacha chad stam, v'hacha trei stame. That there's only one Stam Mishnah that supports Rabbi Yehuda, the Mishnah that we just quoted, with regards to Amashach Emenu Maser B'Sela. That Mishnah supports Rabbi Yehuda. V'hacha trei stame. And for Rabbi Meir, we have two Stam Mishnahs. We have the Mishnah that we quoted before, of the Machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, which appears both in Maaser Sheni and in Ediot. And so therefore, there are two Stam Mishnahs that support Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara says, "V'istam adavka, mali chad stam, mali trei stame." If a Stam Mishnah really teaches you that the Halacha is like this individual, why does it matter that there's one Stam Mishnah or two Stam Mishnahs? It shouldn't matter. As long as there's a Stam Mishnah, it should support that position. The truth is that in other places in Shas, the Gemara does favor an opinion when there's more than one Stam Mishnah. But over here, it's an unusual case. Because the two Stam Mishnahs of Rabbi Meir are the exact same Mishnah. It's not like there are two different Stam Mishnahs in Shas that are like Rabbi Meir. It's the same Mishnah that's repeated in two Masechtot. And therefore, the Gemara rejects it as being a machria in the machloket, because two versus one, it's really one versus one. It just happens to make an appearance twice. So Gemara says, Amar Nachmitz, Aloha Rabbi Meir, no, the Aloha here, even though there's a Stam Mishnah supporting Rabbi Yehuda, and a Stam Mishnah supporting Rabbi Meir with regards to Maiso Sheni, nevertheless, the Aloha is Rabbi Meir, Kolb Tznan Bechirta Kavate. Bechirta is a nickname for Ediot. My second Ediot is, as noted there, Bo Bayom, on that day. It was on the day that Rabban Gamliel was deposed as the Nasi, and he was replaced by Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah because of the altercations that Rabban Gamliel had had with Rabbi Yoshua. And when Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah took over as the Rosh Yeshiva, they took away the guards from the doors of the Beit Midrash, because Rabbi Gamliel only let in people who tochok baro, who were true Talmidei Chachamim. Not that day, it says, bo bo bayom, that hirbet Torah beBeit Midrash, and they were able to clarify all the Mishnayot. On that day, Masechet Ediot was learnt or put together because they had all the people in the Beit Midrash and they were to clarify all those Mishnayot. Therefore, Ediot, which is known as Bechirta, the choice Masechta, is a Masechta that was quote-unquote vetted, and therefore it carries extra weight as a Mishnah. And since the Stam Mishnah of Rabbi Meir is found in Ediot, that gives it more weight, and we will paskin like that Stam Mishnah over the Stam Mishnah of Rabbi Yehuda, which is only found in Maaser Sheni. And so therefore, the halacha is like Rabbi Meir with regards to Maaser Sheni, that ben b'shogeg ben b'mezid, you cannot be mekadesh nisha because it is mamon gevoah. Whereas by hektesh, we will say that the Stam Mishnah supports the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Therefore, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. If you do it b'mezid, it does not work because there's no me'ilah, there's no chilul. Whereas by shogeg, where there is me'ilah and there is chilul, it will work the kiddushin because the money is now chulin and the kiddushin will go through. It's interesting to note that we do believe that when it comes to a Stam Mishnah and a Machloket, the Gemara tells us in other places that ain't Seder the Mishnah. There is no order in the Mishnayot. Meaning that if you found it in one Masechta and another Masechta, you can't say that this Mishnah came first, that one came second. Within a single Masechta, you can say that Rabbi intentionally ordered the Mishnayot that way, and therefore you can draw conclusions from that. That is because if you have a Stam Vachar Kach Machloket, if you have a Stam Mishnah and afterwards a Machloket, it does not carry the weight of a Stam Mishnah. If you have a Machloket Vachar Kach Stam, you have a Machloket and then a Stam Mishnah afterwards, then it has the status of a Stam Mishnah. The problem is here, you have a Machloket in Kiddushin, and you have a Stam Mishnah, whether it's in Orla, or in Maaser Sheni, or in Ediot, it's a different Masechta. So how do you know that this is a Stam Mishnah, which is a Machloket Vachar Kach Stam? It could be a Stam v'achagach machloket, and therefore, how can you say that the Stam Mishnah here carries any weight? The answer to that is that sometimes it's different, which is that Mishnayot appear in different Masechtot, but if a Mishnah appears in its core Masechta, that will carry extra weight. So over here, we have a Mishnah that's discussing Kiddushin, and then as an aside, it discusses the Dinim of Maaser Sheni and Hektesh. That is, this is not the main Masechta for Maaser Sheni. The main Masechta of Maaser Sheni is Masechet Maaser Sheni, or Masechet Orla. So therefore, if we find a Mishnah that is in place, or it's a Mishnah which is contextually relevant, but not the major placement of it, we'll give more weight to the other Mishnah. And therefore, over here, even though there's a Machloket found in Kiddushin between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, the fact that we find a Stam Mishnah in Maaser Sheni, which is the location of these Zidim, we will give more weight to it, and we will call it an equivalent of a Machloket V'Achar Kach Stam Mishnah. Therefore, the Gemara over here assumes that that Stam Mishnah will govern, even though there's no order to the Masechtot in Shas. All right, we'll stop over here on the bottom of Nun Daled Amud Bet.